Hello, inmates in the asylum! Are you properly institutionalized? I hope not. I hope you guys are being able to get out as much as you want to, as much as you can, to make things work. I'm Jay Nemro, this is Quasi Indefatigable Zenilith, and, you know, I turn these things on and sometimes I don't know what I'm going to be talking about. I don't have a clue. I am in Santa Rosa, New Mexico. I'm going home. It's late. It's dark. I'm going to go home and eat, I hope. I'll get home probably about 7 o'clock of an evening. Our bedtime is just right at 8, so I'm not going to have much time with my family. You know what makes me happy? And my wife probably doesn't even know this. When I call Lisa, my wife, on the phone, and sometime during the day to kind of tell her what, you know, tell her what the schedule's looking like, if I'm going to get home that night or if I'm going to have to stay overnight somewhere and then come home later, you know, maybe the next day. She's just so excited. She's almost like she's dancing around, just excited to hear from me. And, you know what? That makes me feel pretty good. And, you know, people might think that's really strange because, you know, we've been married for, how long have we been married for? Come on, Jay! We've been married for 18 years. We got married in 1988 and it's now 2005, so that means it's been 18 years. Sure sounds like, no, it's been 17 years. 17. 17 years we've been married and we're still just excited to be around each other. And I'm sure it's kind of disconcerting to people because, you know, we act like newlyweds and we've got teenage kids. I've got two teenagers. And, shoot, you know, it's still just, it's better now than it was then. You know what, it might be instructive to talk about the secret of my success. And I know most people think of success in the way of money. I certainly don't have much of that. I have other things. And I think they're worth more to me than money. It'd be nice to have more money, honestly. But, you know, I'm grateful for these things just as much as I would be for having more money. If I had more money and didn't have these things, I think I'd be more upset. So here's Jay's secret to success. Number one, love your wife. I was actually told that important thing by a prophet of God. On my birthday, I was actually on my mission in Salt Lake City, Utah, believe it or not. And there was a big conference for the missionaries in that area. And nobody told us who was going to come and speak to us, and it just happened to be the prophet. He wanted to talk to some missionaries, and that's exactly what he did. The president, the prophet of the church, the president at that time was, Ezra Taft Benson, who I really love Ezra Taft Benson because he's my kind of guy. He just pretty much said it straight, you know? There's a lot of times where, you know, people will talk about certain subjects. He was really poignant and really, really told each and every group. He can't separate people into groups. He's talking to men. He's just schwacking men around, telling them they need to do better. Then he talked to the sisters, and they were getting schwacked around, the women. All the men are called brethren, and all the women are called sisters. It isn't that there's a special distinction. When I say brethren, it isn't like priests or somebody like that. When I say sisters, it isn't like nuns. It's all women and it's all men. And you know, and he was just whack. He talked to the kids. He did one for children, and it was mostly about doing what your parents ask you to do, honoring your parents, doing what they ask, and. It was a heck of a thing. I really liked it. I'm kind of a guy. I guess I'm kind of kind of is it a masochist or a saint? I think it's a sadist that likes getting punished. And I guess in this way, I was kind of like, well, it's more of a masochist. I figured it was more other people than it was me. I try to do the best I can. Anyway, that was one of the things that Ezra Taft Benson said at this gathering. That's the first thing he said. He got up and he said, "Brethren, love your wives." They have to understand, missionaries are mostly between the ages of 19 and 21. There's some that are a little bit older. There are some couples, but very few. And the majority of them are boys between the ages of 19 and 21. None of them married. That's the whole point. You go on your mission when you're not married. And we were all looking at each other going, oh my. You have to understand, President Benson was getting very old, and this was really the last time I ever heard him speak publicly. And, you know, we had just come off of many years of having a prophet that really couldn't speak. Prophet in the church, presence of the church, our prophet, he serves for the balance of his life when he's called to be a prophet. It's until he dies. And in some cases, you know, men get pretty feeble at the end of their lives. They can last for some years without being able to really do much. And that was the situation with the prophet just before him, Spencer Kimball. He was a great prophet. Loved Spencer W. Kimball. He was the prophet during most of my growing up. He had just died right before I went on my mission. So, all during my mission, the person who was the prophet of the church was Ezra Taft Benson. We had gotten kind of used to having kind of an absentee prophet and having, you know, the other members of the first presidency kind of being the people that were the face of things. You know, we have a semi-annual conference, and all the apostles, including the first presidency, speak. And then there's a smattering of other general authorities of the church. But you always hear from those 15 men. Now, for the longest time, President Kimball had been in a state where he didn't attend conferences. So we rarely heard from him at all. You know, everything came from his third counselor, his first and the second council were also incapacitated. They were also extremely elderly, and they struggled with health problems to the point to where they often weren't there. So there was a third counselor called, and that was Gordon B. Hinckley, who is now the prophet. He was the counselor at that time, and he was the counselor for. He's been a counselor in the first presidency for a long, long time. Not that that makes him anything more than a member of the first presidency. He's an apostle, just like every other apostle is, but he's called in the first presidency. And when there's nobody else there, he presides over meetings. When the second counselor, the first counselor, and the president of the church can't attend something, or if he's assigned to go somewhere, he was in charge. And that was what we got used to. We had gotten used to kind of an absentee prophet. And so it was really simple to say, oh, President Benson's kind of lost it. You know, he's getting to the point to where maybe he's not understanding where he is and who he's talking to. But then he came back and he said, I want you boys to go home and I want you to get married. And then I want you to yell to your wives. So he said, oh, okay, he knows where he is. He's still with it. He's still here. He's a good guy. He was a great prophet. All the prophets I've known in my life have been great men. I have no reservations in saying that they were prophets of God. And the things that they said are things that people should take to heart. and follow. And that's one of my great secrets of life, is something that President Benson said to a gathering of missionaries that I was a part of way back in the 1980, that would have been 1987, I think. Or no, it was 1988. It was my birthday, 1988. I had just turned 21. Love your wife. That's the biggest thing. I'll tell you a secret about Lisa and I. It's not a secret, but it's something that's special and different. And it just goes with me. You know, Jay's always different. You always know, Jay's got a different way of looking at things. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that almost everything around me has been a little bit different. I didn't date much when I was young. I think I was probably only on maybe 4 or 5 dates my entire life. I can tell you who the people were that I went on dates with, but I'm not going to do that. I didn't date much. Lisa was on the mission in Utah the same time, on her mission the same time I was on mine. We'd met, it was my second area, Twilley, Utah. It was her first. She was having a lot of difficulties with her companion, so she would call over to our apartment just to talk to somebody who, because her trainer, when you first come out on your mission, they stick you with somebody that has more experience, and that person's usually called a trainer. They're supposed to be good, they're supposed to be righteous and all this stuff. And she didn't get one that was particularly good or righteous. At least at that time. I'm not going to say that they repented later and everything was fine. But it wasn't going well for her, so she would call our place. And she would talk to me and my companion. And, you know, I frankly thought that she was kind of a little more interested in my companion than she was in me. Now, when you're on your mission, you don't have relationships with other people besides those you're teaching, and it's certainly not supposed to be anything approaching romantic. Very much, you know, I'm a missionary, I'm here to teach the gospel, and I love you with brotherly love, and all that stuff, and it's very true. That's the way it should be done, and it's a proper way to do it. We had become friends, and I was, you know, I liked her, she liked me, but that was all we ever got to, because that was all it was ever really going to go to. You know, she told me once later that the first time she saw me in sweatpants, she loved my legs. My wife is a very physical person. She's attracted to physical things. I had great legs. I ran cross country as a teenager. I biked my entire mission, so I was in really, really excellent shape back then. Boy, you couldn't tell it now. Not that I'm pudgy or anything, but I'm not in as good shape as I was then, that's for sure. Anyway, so, I had sent Lisa something to kind of cheer up. I guess she was having problems with another area. This is after that we weren't close to each other. I had told the mission president, who is actually the person that kind of leads the mission, that I was starting to have some feelings for Sister Tomplay. That was her maiden name. Lisa's maiden name is Tomplay. And when you're out in your mission, the boys are elders and the sisters are sisters and the girls are sisters. So I only knew her as Sister Tomplay. I didn't even know what her first name was, because you just don't know that. She didn't know what my first name was. I was Elder Nemeril. That was all I ever was to her. You know, it was this guy that always was in a suit. That's what missionaries wear. We always wear suits and ties. White shirts and ties. You know more of missionaries because they're always in white shirts and ties with a little name tag on. And I told the mission president I had feelings for, and then, well, immediately thereafter I was transferred out of that area. And that was a good idea, and I knew it was going to happen when I said that. And it was to protect us both. I didn't want us to get into trouble. So I went on for my mission, and she went on for hers. We never really saw each other again. We were always kind of in different parts of the mission, and you don't get together for big mission things. We happened to have a big mission gathering. I forget what it was for. It may have been Christmas, just before I was due to go home. I went home in July, but I think the last big... There might have been a big get-together. No! The big get-together was when President Benson spoke to us. So it was right there on my birthday. I was going to go home in about a month and a few weeks. And she was going home almost immediately. Sisters, young women, they're not really young. The girls that go on their missions are older. They're usually 21 or older when they go on a mission. Guys are younger. They're 19, 20, 21. Unless they come into their mission field later than that, which is fine. It's not a big problem. I went pretty much on schedule. When I turned 19, I was within a couple of weeks of going on my mission. Okay. So, that was the last time, and we talked, and she said, I'm going to be excited, I'm going to be changing my name. And I thought that she was getting married. I thought it was already kind of set up. You have to understand, in the Utah mission, I don't know how appropriate it is, but often, these are people that aren't from Utah. You don't usually go on a mission to where you're from. They send you somewhere else. That way you don't have any particular connections. You have fewer distractions from the work of the mission to say, okay, well, I'm going to go home for a couple of weeks because it's so close. They don't do that, typically. Usually you go somewhere else. So everybody in Utah were people that weren't from Utah. And you have to understand, for a whole lot of us, this was our first experience of being around a lot of different LDS people in closed quarters. Utah's full, at least from my perspective, Utah's full of LDS girls. And, you know, if you have enough LDS girls, there's going to be some cute ones there. And so it can be very distracting. The Utah mission is very difficult. And there's a lot of shenanigans going on because, you know, these elders come. They're used to being from, like, little branches like I am, where you may be the only guy or the only person anywhere near your age. And that's kind of the situation I came from. Lisa had a little bit better circumstance. She actually came from an organized stake. She was from New Orleans. And there was enough people there that you actually had a stake there, and there was actually whole congregations of just singles, or a whole congregation of just singles. And they would come and they would have fun together. So she'd actually come from a place where there was a lot of people, a lot of LDS people, at least within earshot. Honestly, I had never come from a place like that. I had come from a place where I was either the only member or one of just a handful. And so it was pretty common for missionaries, especially if they had, if they were district leaders over sisters, or if they were in districts that had sisters, a mission is separated up into zones and districts. And each one has his own or district leader that's called from, you know, the mission president calls them from whoever is there to say, okay, this is your person, he's going to be your district leader. He takes care of some of the administrative needs of an area, and that's pretty much its function. He does a few other things, too. Anyway, there was a whole bunch of, you know, it wasn't surprising at all to hear that a couple of months after people's missions were over, that all of a sudden they'd be married, and they'd be married to a sister from the mission. And that was not unheard of. And, so that was pretty common. I wasn't thinking that way at all. I was of the mind that Sister Conflay was going to get married, and that there was every thought that she would get married to somebody from the mission. So I figured it was done. So I sent her a nice letter when she got home, and I said, hi. I told her what my first name was, and I said, this is Jay, you remember me, Elder Nimro, and I'm getting ready to go home too. And I had said that if ever she wanted to, she'd come out and see me. I never seriously thought she ever would. I mean, you know, guys say that to people, and, you know, girls go, oh yeah, that sounds nice, and then they never do it. But Lisa did. When I was just getting ready to leave, you go into the mission office, and you have to do the paperwork before you go out. My dad had actually come pick me up and take me home. And I got a letter from, and he was holding on to a letter from Sister Donnelly, and he says, I've been holding this for you, because he wouldn't let it actually get to me, because he didn't want me to be distracted my last few weeks. And I got this letter, and Sister Donnelly said, I'm going to come out and see you. I want to come see you. And she was actually serious. I was kind of floored. And sure enough, I got home. I got released from my mission, so I didn't have to wear a suit anymore, and I just became Jay Nimro again. And just a couple of days after that, by golly, there was Sister Donnelly, Lisa. She was on my doorstep. So she stayed in town for a few days. Well, she actually stayed at my mom's house. We were in separate rooms, but we were in the same house. Guy, it's almost kind of spooky. And we went on one date. I was kind of concerned because I said, you know, I said, she was going to go on and go back to Utah because, heck, that's where all the marriage possibilities were. I mean, gee whiz. There's guys galore. In fact, she was going to go see two or three other guys while after she went to see me. So I was sitting there, and I, you know, I talked about long-distance relationships and how they don't work, and I was just basically saying it was really nice and how much I liked her, and we could write, but she was all in favor of writing and trying to spark some relationship, and I was kind of poo-pooing the whole thing. And I remember it was Sunday. It was my homecoming. In those days, you would come home from your mission and you'd have to make a report to the people that sent you on the mission. Well, I actually paid for my whole mission, so it wasn't like they sent me. But you go back to your ward, to your congregation, and you make a report of your mission, and that's what I did. She was there. There were some other people there, but it doesn't really make any difference. And after that, that afternoon, I was actually praying, and I prayed, and I said, well, you know, what should I do about this situation? And it was the first time I think I've ever really heard a voice. You know, I've always had impressions. I've always felt impressed by the Holy Spirit to do some things. And you get that often on your mission because, you know, your mission is one of your most spiritual times. And, you know, because you're just concentrating totally on spiritual matters. You don't have distractions of work. You don't have distractions of anything else. Your life is very simple. And all you do is you go out and you teach the gospel to people. And all of a sudden, boom! This voice came to me. I'm not saying she, it's not she. This voice came to me that said, marry her. And I was like, what? You know, we were friends, but, you know, really, we had spent probably only like 7 or 8... No, I can't say that. We hadn't spent very much time with each other at all. And especially not even in the whole thing of dating. We only went on one date. She came, I think, on like a Monday or a Tuesday. And it was now the Sunday following that. And that was it. That was the total extent of her thing. It was marrying her. So I went out, and I'm very shy. I was much more shy then than I am now. And we had this, and I asked her to marry me, and she was floored. I found out later that she was kind of excited about the whole thing. She wasn't expecting on me actually proposing to her. She was thinking I was going to blow her off, And I did, and I proposed to her. And, well, I can tell the rest of the story later because our time's up. I'm past time. This is Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith. We'll go on with the story some more. I want some more things about loving and about having happiness and stuff like that. This is Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith. I'm Jay Nemro. Quicks.us.